Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to take up the study of the book of Proverbs, starting in chapter 1. In this audio, I will go over the prologue to the book of Proverbs, the purpose of the book, the theme of the book. We will look at some exhortations to embrace wisdom. We will look at a warning against rejecting wisdom. I'm basically going to entitle chapter 1 simply Wisdom. We begin now in Proverbs 1, verses 1 through 7. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge, and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. In verse 1, we see that the book begins with an attribution of authorship, the Proverbs of Solomon. Solomon is said to have made 3,000 proverbs, we read in 1 Kings 4:32. He, that Solomon, also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. Somebody's keeping close count. 3,000 sounds like a round number. Songs, 1,005, sounds like a precise number. But at any rate, he was noted for his proverbs. Now, we can't be said whether any of these 3,000 proverbs ended up in the book of Proverbs. We don't know that, but I think it's likely that some of them did. It is certain that all of those 3,000 Proverbs are not in the book of Proverbs because the book of Proverbs contains only about 915 Proverbs, according to John Gill. Now, here are some characteristics of the Proverbs in this book. This is as reported by Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. The Proverbs are pithy. They convey well-established truth. The Hebrew word for proverb, mashal, means a comparison. Most of the Proverbs are in couplets or triplets, or some modification thereof. The Proverbs illustrate Hebrew parallelism very well. When one side of the parallelism is left out, the proverb becomes a riddle or dark saying as you try to guess what the right side of the parallelism is. The Proverbs are not easily subjected to logical analysis and division. It would be nice if you could create a taxonomy of proverbs and saying these proverbs deal with wisdom, these proverbs deal with staying away from adulteresses and so forth, but you can't really do that. You can say, however, that the first 9 chapters are an introduction to the rest of the book. Now let's talk about Solomon a little bit. One of my commentators says that Solomon had a wise and understanding heart, as large as the sand of the sea, and was wiser than all men, and was an eminent type of Christ, who spoke in Proverbs also. Let's read about Solomon in 1 Kings 4:29 through 31. Now God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind, like the sand that is on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, Heman, Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahal, and his fame was known in all the surrounding nations. Some wise men that were well known in verse 31 are mentioned, Ethan the Ezrahite, Heman, Chalcol. Heman, I think, is one of the Levitical singers. I'm speaking from memory. I think that's true. I think Ethan the Ezrahite actually wrote one of the Psalms. Again, speaking from memory. But our main point here in 1 Kings 4 is that Solomon was noted for his wisdom, wiser than all the wise men around him. His mind was as broad and expansive as the sand that is on the seashore. He was wiser than all the sons of Egypt. He was one smart dude. Proverbs is the first book of the Bible that's prefaced by the author, the Proverbs of Solomon. Solomon drew upon no heathen sources. He lived 500 years or more before Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, those great Greek paragons of wisdom. Solomon is the leading author of the book of Proverbs, but he is not the author of all the Proverbs, because the 30th chapter was written by Agur, A-G-U-R, of whom we know absolutely nothing, and the 31st chapter is written by Lemuel, again, of whom we absolutely know nothing. Now, Solomon is identified in verse 1 as the son of David. David is a wise father. He's mentioned to give the book more weight because David is a very famous king, of course. And, of course, Solomon is very big on listening to the instructions of one's father, as we'll see as we read his Proverbs, and so why not mention David, the wise father? Now, verse 2 gives the purpose that Solomon wrote these Proverbs, to know wisdom and instruction. to discern the sayings of understanding. As John Gill eloquently puts it, to make known or to teach men wisdom and knowledge. That's the purpose of the Proverbs, not only in things moral, and therefore these Proverbs are by some called Solomon's Ethics. And indeed, they do contain the best system of morality in the whole world. Nothing like it is to be extracted out of all the writings of the heathen poets and philosophers, not only in things civil, for which reason they may be called his politics, seeing they are instructive to kings and civil magistrates, and to subjects, and also his economics, seeing they furnish out rules for husbands and wives, parents and children, masters and servants, worthy of their attention and observance. And of course, economics is used there in the sense of home economics, family economics. Gill continues, but also the Proverbs are a means of and are designed to teach spiritual and evangelical wisdom and knowledge, things relating to Jesus Christ, the wisdom of God and the way of life and salvation by him, the knowledge of which is life eternal. Now, Gill is very, very quick to take Old Testament writings and apply them to Jesus. That's very pious, but I don't think Solomon really knew anything about Jesus at this time. His Proverbs might be applied to the teachings of Jesus, of course, but I don't think that was the purpose of him writing the Proverbs because he didn't know anything about the Messiah. Now, in verse 2, it is also said that the Proverbs were written so that people might know instruction as well as wisdom. Instruction, that word instruction, the Hebrew word there that's translated as instruction, is also used for discipline and correction. So the Proverbs were written for the purpose of disciplining the reader or instructing the reader. He mentions again instruction in verse 3, to receive. The reason the Proverbs were written were so that the reader might receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, equity. Again, instruction might be reproof or correction. In verse 4, the Proverbs were written to give prudence to the naive. That's the NASB translation. The King James has this translation. The Proverbs are written to give subtly to the simple. Subtly to the simple. I like that one. Here's what Gill says eloquently. By attending to what is herein contained, the reader may arrive to a serpentine subtlety, though they are simple and harmless as doves. They may become as wise as serpents and may attain to an exquisite knowledge of divine things and know even more than the wise and sage philosophers among the Gentiles or any of the rabbis and masters of Israel or any of the princes of this world whose wisdom comes to naught. And they might become very cautious and circumspect how they are drawn aside by the old serpent, the devil, or by such who lie in wait to deceive and perform their duty both to God and man. Now, only John Gill could have written something like that. These Proverbs are a treasure. And I will say this, I hear Christians quoting Proverbs all the time. I've held off on studying the Proverbs closely, but people quote them all the time. Christians do. They are quite useful in one's devotional life. Now, the Proverbs are said in verse 4 to give prudence to the naive. Who are the naive? John Gill says they are men of mean abilities, weak capacities, shallow understandings, incautious, credulous, and easily imposed upon. So the Proverbs are working upon very frail human material. In verse 6, the Proverbs give understanding so that people might understand a proverb and a figure, a metaphor, that the reader might understand the words of the wise and their riddles. Now, who are the wise? John Gill says that Solomon is not talking of heathen philosophers, but writers of the scriptures, and I question that. I suspect that Solomon is talking about wisdom from wherever it might have come. Now, in verse 6, Solomon says that his proverbs will help the simple, the naive, understand riddles of the wise, riddles. Adam Clark says that that word riddles is really parables, or has the meaning of parables, just like the parables delivered by Jesus. And the word parable in English nearly, closely, almost expresses the meaning of the original. Says Clark, the proverb is a concentrated parable, and the parable an extension of the proverb by a full illustration. In other words, a proverb is a mini parable, and a parable is a maximized proverb. The meaning in Hebrew is so close to our English concepts of parable and proverbs that really they're almost the same thing. The Greek employs two words, the difference between a riddle and a parable, but the sacred writers of the scriptures often don't make a distinction between a riddle and a parable. If you think about it, if you listen to the parables of Jesus, you have to think about what is he talking about. It's like solving a riddle is very close, just a little bit longer with more illustration. Verse 7, Solomon says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." Now, of course, that verse is quoted all the time. It is actually the very first proverb in the book. Now, this fear of the Lord, this beginning of knowledge, is not a servile fear. It's not a fear of hell and damnation. Rather, it's a filial fear, as John Gill puts it, a holy, humble, fiducial fear of God, a reverential affection for Him and devotion to Him. Here's some comparable proverbs, Proverbs 2:1. Solomon says, "My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, my son, if you accept my words," dropping down to verse 5, "then you will understand the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God." So, fear and knowledge of God. You will understand the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. In Proverbs 14, verses 26 through 7, in Proverbs 14, verses 26 through 27, Solomon says this, "In the fear of the Lord, one has strong confidence, and his children have a refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, turning people away from the snares of death." So reverence for God is a great way to have wisdom, confidence, refuge, life, the avoidance of death. We move now to Proverbs 1, verses 8 through 16. Solomon continues, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without cause, let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit,' we will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us. We shall all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood." In verse 8, Solomon says, "Hear, my son." Now, we can assume, probably, that that's Solomon's literal son, just like his mother was a literal mother that he mentioned, "Do not forsake your mother's teaching." So he could be talking to his own son. Now, which son was it? Solomon had a lot of sons, and we don't really know which son this might be. Perhaps it's Rehoboam, the king of Judah, who succeeded Solomon after he provoked Jeroboam to revolt, and Jeroboam formed the northern kingdom, took 10 tribes of Israel away and split the whole nation up. And Rehoboam was a fool. He didn't heed Solomon's exhortation to not consent to sinners, blandishments. He listened to all his young advisors who said, "Let's raise taxes on these people." And the northern 10 tribes had a tax revolt. But at any rate, Solomon's advice is very good. I don't know what it is about being young, but there are all kinds of temptations to do evil. I think of my youth. I think of the times the cops were chasing me. I'm not exaggerating. The stupidity of youth. I was young and dumb, and I tell young people, college students all the time, I'm saying, "Hey, you're young and dumb. I was too. You are too. So just realize that you are probably making a bad decision here." I mentioned earlier that David was mentioned in the first verse, probably because Solomon was so big on listening to father's instruction. Well, we see this here in verse 8, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction," in Proverbs 1. In Proverbs 6:20, we read this, "My son, keep your father's command and don't reject your mother's teaching." So Solomon was big on listening to his parents. And then he describes all these evil people who are conspiring to do crime, to ambush the innocent. The conspirators say, "Let us swallow the innocent alive like Sheol." Sheol's the grave, the pit. Parallel to Sheol is the pit, even whole as those who go down to the pit. In other words, let's just throw them alive into their grave. Then we can steal from them, rob from them, and fill our houses up with spoil, and we'll have one purse, we'll divvy it up, and we can all get rich. Sounds good, doesn't it? Solomon tells his son, don't do that. Solomon tells his son in verse 10, "My son, do not consent." Adam Clark makes a trenchant observation here. He says, "Not even the devil himself can lead a man into sin unless that man consents. Unless he puts a gun to his head, but in that case, the law will forgive him because the act was done under duress." So that basically means you're free to choose whether you're going to walk in the way of the ungodly or in the way of the righteous. Choose the correct way. We move now to Proverbs chapter 1, verses 17 through 19. Solomon continues, "It is foolish to spread a net where any bird can see it, but they set an ambush to kill themselves. They attack their own lives. Such are the paths of all who make profit dishonestly. It takes the lives of those who receive it. Now, in verse 17, how do we interpret this metaphor? It is foolish to spread a net where any bird can see it. Well, let's take option number one. The bird is innocent. The net is spread for an innocent bird who has done nothing to the fowler, just like an ambusher does to an innocent traveler. He traps him even though the traveler is innocent. Option number two, the bird is stupid. Even though the net is spread before the bird still gets caught. The bird is so interested in getting corn and getting food for himself. The point of the analogy in option number two would be this. Ruin and destruction are plainly before the eyes of thieves and murderers, but they are so intent on booty they don't see it. They don't see that they are attacking their own lives. They're going to kill themselves because justice will be done. Option number three, the bird is smart. If one spreads the net in sight of the bird will get away. If this option were to be correct, then the point of the analogy would be this. The wicked are laying snares for the innocent. Once an innocent man knows what the designs of the wicked are, he will never be caught. Solomon is trying to point out that the wicked are spreading baited nets and that the innocent don't need to get caught like unsuspecting birds. Clark and Gill come up with that interpretation. It's a little difficult. The bird is either innocent, stupid, or smart. If he's innocent, then he is a victim of evil people. If he's stupid, then the evil people don't. If he is stupid, then the evil people capture him. If he's smart, then he gets away from the evil people. Well, whatever Solomon meant there, what he says in verse 18 is quite true, that they are hoisting themselves on their own petard. To use the old-fashioned English, they're killing themselves. They attack their own lives. In killing others, they are killing themselves. Why? Because they're going to get caught. Or if they don't get caught by the earthly authorities, they're going to be judged by the divine authority, God himself. Such are the paths of all who make profit dishonestly. It takes the lives of those who receive it. And that's generally true. It's very rare that people who steal money get away with it. That there was a huge heist, bank heist in North Carolina that made a movie about it. And these bumbling fools just squandered all the money. Happens all the time. If you're dishonest enough to steal money, you probably aren't going to be smart enough to manage money. We move now to Proverbs chapter 1, verses 20 through 33, and we will read the famous passage about wisdom, and we will be finished with this proverb. Wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings. How long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. Because I called, and you refused, I stretched out my hand, and no one paid attention. And you neglected all my counsel, and did not want my reproof. I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes. When your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. So they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own devices. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. So basically, wisdom is crying out, you should have listened to me, you didn't, and calamity fell on your head, but those who do listen to me are going to be in good shape. Now, who is this wisdom shouting in the street? This is a famous personification. Now, I have got A through H options as to who this wisdom is, which proves to me that nobody really knows what Solomon meant. I think he was just personifying wisdom in general, but let's look at the options. Option one, wisdom is the attribute of divine wisdom displayed in creation. You look around, you look at the stars, you look at the sun, you look at the moon, and you figure, well, there must be somebody wise behind that. So that's the same wisdom, the shouting in the street, the wisdom of God. Option number two, the wisdom is the light of nature in man. One's conscience, I guess you would say, that wisdom. Option number three, the wisdom of the law of Moses. Option number four, the wisdom of the scriptures, New Testament as well as old. Of course, the New Testament, this is the Old Testament. Or maybe you could say all of the Old Testament scriptures. Option number five, the gospel. That's the New Testament, this is the Old Testament. I don't see that, but somebody has mentioned that as an option. A personification of Jesus. John Gill says that's what wisdom refers to. Jesus is shouting in the streets. Gill refers to that part of verse 23, which says, "Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you." That sounds like Jesus. Gill says that this whole passage is a prophecy of Jesus' ministry and opposition to Jesus' ministry. I don't know about that, but that's exactly what happened. Jesus came, he preached wisdom, and people killed him for it, which is just about the way it works. Think of all the time you try to give wisdom to people. Basic wisdom, like 2 + 2 = 4. It's not 5. Don't do that. Nah, people got better ideas what to do than what you tell them. In verse 27, wisdom says, "When your dread comes like a storm, you stupid people, and your calamity comes like a whirlwind." Gill says that's referring to AD 70, when the Romans wiped out the nation of Israel. Now, Jesus quoted some of these words directly out of Proverbs, John 7:34, "You will seek me, and you will not find me, and where I am, you cannot come." That sounds like verse 24, "Because I called and you refused, I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention." All right, going back to our list of possibilities of who this wisdom is, after Jesus we have another option, the teachings given to man either by divine revelation or by the voice of the Holy Spirit in the heart. Again, New Testament, that's Adam Clark. And the last option is just God. God is shouting in the streets. Well, I don't know, it's just so easy to me to say that this is poetry. I mean, it's a proverb. He's talking about wisdom. He's personifying wisdom and refers to wisdom. That's my humble opinion. Interestingly enough, that word wisdom is plural in the Hebrew, wisdoms. Some people speculate that the plural shows that this is an unusual sense of the word wisdom, such as it would be if it referred to God or Jesus, or maybe it's an intensifier. The plural indicates the great excellency of wisdom. I don't know. Let's look at a comparable proverb about wisdom. Proverbs 9:1. "Wisdom has built her house. She has carved out her 7 pillars. Of course, 7 is the number of perfection, completion. Wisdom has built a complete house. Why don't you come live in it? In verse 28, wisdom says that people upon whom calamity has come like a whirlwind, they will call on me, but I will not answer. Here's some comparable proverbs to that. Proverbs 8:17. "I love those who love me, and those who search for me find me." Proverbs 28:9. "He who turns away his ear from listening to the law, even his prayer is an abomination." In other words, I'm not going to listen to you if you're going to be so stupid and turn your back on me and hate me and don't search for me. Here's another scripture that has the same idea. It's not in Proverbs. It's in Jeremiah 29:13. God says, "You will seek me," talking to the Israelites, "you will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart." And with that wise word, we can finish this proverb and say, if you want wisdom and all of its attendant benefits, you're going to have to search God. And searching God doesn't mean just playing around, praying a minute a day, reading one little passage of the scripture a day, and then going out and doing your business. No, you got to search for God with all your heart. And believe me, looking at it from my point of view down here, when you are struggling with something and searching for God, it's an experience. It's difficult. But boy, when you find him and you get wisdom, when you were looking for wisdom and didn't have it, it's worth more than all the gold that used to be in Fort Knox. I doubt it's there anymore because we've inflated our currency to nothingness. But at any rate, we have now finished Proverbs chapter 1, and we are prepared to go to Proverbs chapter 2. Solomon will continue with his theme of wisdom. We will entitle chapter 2, "The Value of Wisdom." I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.